This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Money Crimes is a podcast all about the dark side of finance and sometimes murder. Find Money Crimes on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am Connor Dunning, former Memphis Tiger videographer, filling in for Gabe Kuhn while he's out. You can find me at cdunning929 on X and Twitter. I'm also over on Blue Sky. Just search Connor Dunning and I should pop up. It is a Thursday, which means tonight, 7 p.m., Hampline Brewing. I will be there hosting Cerrito Quizmas, Christmas General Knowledge Trivia. Make sure you come through. Great beer and pizza, one of my favorite spots in the city of Memphis, so please come out to play. It is free to play. We are on day 100 without Grizzlies basketball. It's getting dark out there. I'm confused as to what to do with my time. I folded laundry last night. The ADHD doom pile that usually exists in a chair in our bedroom is no more. I'm running out of things to do. I watched the Memphis Hustle to tide me over. Bacot, 25 points? Hell yeah. I'm struggling, though. I'm struggling. Luckily, to help me through my struggle, we are joined by the big man himself, Gabe Kuhn. He is here in studio. Oh, my God, he's here in studio. I'm so excited. So we're going to talk to Gabe Kuhn here in just a second. We are going to do a Baby Kuhn retrospective. All the stories Mr. Gabe Kuhn has missed since he has been out being a new father. After that, we'll get into the quarter season awards for the NBA. Then we'll talk to Jeff Calkins about Bill Belichick and UNC. And Jaren Jackson Jr. went on Tony Allen and Zach Randolph's podcast and made a claim that the 2022 Memphis Grizzlies would have beaten the 2013 Memphis Grizzlies. Do I agree? Do I disagree? I'm going to talk to Jeff Calkins about that at 5 o'clock. Then we will have the blitz and small talk to wrap it up. But I got to welcome in some people. I am joined, as always, by the Honorable King George, George Ruggiero. You can find him on Twitter, at KingGeorge94. George, what's up, my friend?
How's it going? I mean, again today, saw you in the studio, in the building, you know, really going at it, scratching, really hoping for
I'm fiending for some Grizzlies basketball, man. This break is fantastic. You know, I don't mind not being in the NBA Cup. I think the Grizzlies needed this break. You heard Santi Aldama talking about it, but damn it, I miss Grizzlies basketball. I need it back in my life. It is exciting to watch the Grizzlies again. I'm looking forward to it again. And after the darkness of last season, I need them back. I need them back. I need to watch winning basketball.
Would the Hustle game yesterday have really, you know, hit a little different if we saw Kawamura or Spencer play?
Yes, definitely. That would have certainly
helped. Or Castleton
even.
Or
if I would have gotten to 52 or 51 point performance from Cam Spencer, I would have been all in. But it's time now. We have to welcome him back to his own show, the Gabe Kuhn Show. It is Gabe Kuhn. You can find him on Twitter at G_Kuhn71. Gabe Kuhn!
Fellas!
What's
how's
up,
it
man?
Going? We got Italian George on the other side.
Whoa.
We got Connor. You guys have done a good job since I've been out, man.
Well,
how's it going?
It's been going well. Yes, am I Scott-Irish Connor and you're Italian George?
Yes.
Is that what we're going
with?
That's
just our new moniker. Like, yes. We have to be called that from now on.
Absolutely. King George is no longer. Now it is Italian George.
Italian George.
Well, Gabe, you have missed a lot.
Yes, I have.
Since you've been out. But before we get into that, I got to ask, how's the baby?
Oh,
how's
good.
Mom doing? How are
good.
You doing?
This was getting out of my house and coming to studio was my way of getting out of the house for the day. I've been texting you. Usually I take a trip to Target just to find something. I'd get a Diet Coke or something. But to just get out of the house for a second is nice. But there's been a lot of pooping, a lot of crying, lot of puking, lot of, you know, diaper changes. I mean, that's all it is, man. Not enough caffeine in the world for the amount of sleep you're going to get.
So that's enough about you.
If you guys ever go that direction. But,
yeah. So that's enough about you. How's the baby doing?
Doing well.
It's a great selling point here.
I will say, he came out small. Came out small. 6 pounds, 10 ounces.
David Cobb has been doing victory laps.
And Jeffrey doing victory laps too. Like, that was the biggest upset ever. But then once week two hit, 11 ounces gained. So we're up to 7 pounds, 7 ounces. We're on our way. We're on our way.
You keeping Ryan Silverfield updated?
Yes, every single time. He's got a preferred, you know, Myers has a preferred walk on deal until he gains some weight, and then we'll see where the chips fall from there. We'll see where the chips fall.
How's his pass pro?
Oh gosh. His footwork is impeccable. It's absolutely impeccable. We're getting there.
As it should be. Well, Gabe, we've got a lot of things that we got to get through with you, but I do think that we have to start with the college football playoff. The people are yearning to hear Gabe Kuhn's opinion on the teams that are in. Do you have any issue with Alabama being left out, Gabe Kuhn?
No gripes at all. None. SMU sitting there at 8 before they played the ACC championship. And then you had a 50-some-odd yard field goal after a great return by Clemson to win 34-31 as time expired. If SMU wouldn't have come back, I probably would have had some gripes because it would have showed that SMU in their ranked matchups didn't fare very well. They played against BYU. They ended up losing. I believe that was at home. And then if they would have lost to Clemson by the way it was tracking, probably drop them out, put Alabama in. But they cut it to a 3-point loss in the ACC championship game. I have no gripes about that. Them getting in is completely fine with me. So I think all the teams, quite frankly, are right. If you're making the Alabama case, you are ignoring one big thing. If they just beat Vandy or Oklahoma, two very middling teams, two mediocre SEC teams, they get in. If they beat one of those two. So, like, I can't sit here and be mad for Alabama or Alabama fans. I heard A.J. McCarron. We've had Tyler Siski on the show before. He used to be a player personnel guy with Ole Miss and Alabama and stuff over the years. And he has A.J. McCarron on his show with Neil McCready every week. McCready and Siski. Really good podcast. Go check it out if you can. But A.J. McCarron, former Alabama quarterback, went on there and said, guys, if we had three losses back in 08 or 09 when I was playing, we had nothing to play for. We were not living up to the standard. So I can't sit here and be mad for Alabama having lost 24-3 down the stretch of the season to Oklahoma, having lost to Vandy earlier in the year. You just didn't have that much ground to stand on. I understand SMU did not play the toughest of schedules, but they had a heck of a year, and I respect them for that. And I think that Rhett Lashley, what he did, putting Kevin Jennings in there over Preston Stone, who was supposed to be a potential Heisman candidate and a guy who he's now in the transfer portal, and we'll see what happens with that. But he was supposed to be a guy who was supposed to be very, very highly thought of and was going to have a big year. He made that switch after that BYU game, and they played completely different. So I think they got the teams right. The one gripe I do have just generally is ranking teams that win their conference championship in the top four and giving them a bye. I have a problem with that. I you know, you look at Arizona State and Boise State. I agreed with the thought process. Now that I see it on paper, I hate it because you give a team in Oregon who had a unbelievable year, undefeated, you're only undefeated in college football right now. And what do they get for it? What's their gift? They get either Tennessee or Ohio State, and then they get to side with Texas on it. Georgia, who lost two games this year, gets Indiana or Notre Dame. Like, it's just it has exacerbated what we've talked about during the regular season, where you have a bunch of schedules that are not built the same. And I think Oregon should have gotten a better draw. And the reason they didn't get a better draw is because we're ranking conference champions in that top four to give them a bye for whatever reason. I think it should be at-larges. It should be ranked how the rankings fall. And if you win your conference championship, you win your conference championship.
I totally agree. And that's why I think a lot of people's gripes with the college football playoff, I've been seeing at least, it has more to do with the seeding than necessarily the teams that are in, because I understand the SEC conversation. I get what people are saying. The SEC deserves more credit because of the in-conference schedule they play. I understand it. Most middling SEC teams would have a lot of success in a conference like the ACC. I get it. But if I had walked up to an Alabama fan in July and said, all you have to do to make it into the first 12-team playoff is beat Vanderbilt, something that y'all haven't not done for generations.
Yes.
Every single one of them would have said, yes, that seems like a fair deal to me. Well, guess what? You lost to Vanderbilt.
Yep.
So how am I supposed to put you in the college football playoff? What happened was they headed into that championship weekend, and the committee was saying, this is beautiful. The ACC is going to get one bid. We're going to get to sneak Alabama in. The SEC is going to get another team. We're going to get a huge brand in there. And then SMU came back, and a 56-yarder changed the way the biddings had to happen. The ACC had to get two bids at that point. Yep. Sorry, Alabama. You're on the outside looking in.
Yeah, and here's the thing about the Alabama conversation and how bad the conversation has devolved. Nick Saban was talking about it, and people want to ignore, a lot of Alabama and SEC fans want to ignore the fact that he said, yeah, I'm fine with Alabama not being in.
Yeah, they're leaving that part out.
They're leaving that part out. But then Nick Saban went on to talk about the out-of-conference schedule and how I have no reason, if we're not going to take strength of schedule into consideration, why do I even play a tough out-of-conference schedule? Well, here's the thing about the Alabama out-of-conference schedule. It wasn't that hard.
No.
They played a 5-7 Wisconsin team. They played a team in Western Kentucky who was good in the Conference USA, but they lost the Conference USA title game. South Florida, who ended up 6-6. And they won all of those games. All of their losses came to in-conference opponents. Three losses against in-conference SEC opponents. So I don't know why that has been the talking point that everyone's latching onto for Alabama and the SEC and why they should get more bids and everything else. That has been a frustrating devolving of the conversation as I have watched this play out over the past couple of weeks.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you next, is what did you make of the Alabama AD suggestion that Alabama is going to change their non-conference scheduling? Because some people have pointed out that over the next few seasons, they do have home and homes with some of the bigger brands in college football. But when you look at their schedule for next year, even, I'm like, this still isn't that world-beating.
I get
Florida
why
State.
Greg Byrne's taking that approach. Your SEC conference schedule is good enough to where you can make up ground in the strength of schedule conversation, the strength of record conversation. The only problem I have is we get used to those early season out-of-conference matchups and maybe playing them at neutral sites with the Chick-fil-A or the Peach Bowl kickoff game and stuff like that. I think it would take away from the game, especially in the early season, if you decide to just schedule Mercer three times, you know what I mean, in the out-of-conference. So I get why he's saying what he's saying. I just think it would take away from the lore of college football even further than what we've seen the past, 5-6 years.
Do you expect there to be changes with how they operate the 12-team playoff after this year?
Oh, God, yeah. Look, Greg Sankey's already doing it. He's laying the groundwork. So, yeah, get ready for it. 14 teams, 4 teams from the Big Ten, 4 teams from the SEC, probably at-larges in general, just ranked straight 1 to 14. That's probably what it will be. We'll see if a Group of 5 team can get a seat at the table going forward. Boise State really sort of showed that it's possible to go get that bye game and get in relatively easily. So I think there's going to be massive changes, and it's all going to favor, of course, the Big Ten and the SEC, as it always has.
What about your boy, Kenny Dillingham?
How about
Arizona State?
What a stud.
Picked last to win, and all of a sudden they're the champions of the conference.
Yeah. He is a new age coach who understands how to work the portal, who understands how to turn around a roster, who understands how to relate to his players. This doesn't surprise me. We had him on the show, last offseason?
Yep.
As the offseason began. And obviously he had a rough start there, but what Herm Edwards left behind and all the things they had to deal with recruiting violations and things of that nature, I think he's done a tremendous job. And I just think it's just how he's wired. He is a perfect representative for that university. He's from there. He went there. He knows what it takes, and his players just absolutely adore him. I think him and Dan Lanning are cut from a very similar cloth in that regard.
So, first-round matchups, Clemson, Texas, Tennessee, Ohio State, SMU, Penn State, Indiana, Notre Dame. Got three questions for you. Game you're most excited about, game you're least excited about, game with the most upset potential.
Game I'm most excited about, Ohio State and Tennessee. I'm not going to count out Tennessee in this game. I think Tennessee's defense has really shown up in the biggest moments of the season. Obviously going on the road could be a little bit of a little bit of trouble. It'll be cold in Columbus.
Cold in Knoxville, though.
A lot of
cold in Knoxville.
Yeah, for sure. But a lot of people. It's colder there. It's colder in Columbus.
It's certainly colder. Yeah,
and you know, there's going to be a lot of people in there. They're going to fill it up. And I really think that it could be a very, very highly contested matchup. And I want to see what Nico Iamaleava and that offense, Dylan Sampson, all these guys can do against that Ohio State defense, who's been very tough all year. I think this could be a lower scoring game, but that's the one I'm most excited about, least excited about, got to be honest with you. I'm not overly excited about SMU and Penn State. I just think Penn State is bigger, more physical, and they have a really good defense. They have a really good pass rush with Abdul Carter there on the outside. I think they can really show SMU, you guys have played nobody. And when you did play people that were in the top 25, BYU and Clemson in particular, you lost. And if it weren't for some late-game heroics, you would have gotten blown out of the water in the ACC championship game by Clemson. And then the final game, the final question, one that I think has the most upset potential, Indiana and Notre Dame.
Yep.
Don't overlook it, guys. I know Indiana's going to have to go to South Bend. And I understand that Indiana played that one game against Ohio State, 38-15, wasn't even close. It couldn't run the ball, couldn't throw the ball, couldn't do anything. But do you know one thing that really gives me hope about this Indiana team? If you've seen where they rank as far as rush defense is concerned, number one in the country. They only allow 70-some-odd yards per game on the ground. And what does Notre Dame do best with Jeremiah Love and with Riley Leonard, that dual threat attack in the backfield? They run the ball at the highest of levels. If they can't do that, Riley Leonard kind of puts himself into a different conversation. I know a lot of people like him in the NFL draft conversations, but he's got to be better throwing the ball. And one thing Indiana, I think, has the capability of doing is saying, all right, Riley, let's get you to those 3- and 5-step drops, and let's see if you can beat us throwing the ball. So I think that game really does have some upset potential on the surface, because Indiana's defense is a lot better than people give credit for. They stop the run, and Notre Dame's big selling point on the offensive side of the ball is running the ball.
And to your point, even though they got kind of blown out by Ohio State, they only gave up 115 rushing yards.
Yep.
The rushing defense showed up in
their
that game.
They're number one in the country. Like, people don't even realize that.
It doesn't happen
that.
By mistake.
Yeah. They're number one in the country at stopping the run. They do that at a very high level. And if you put Riley Leonard, the quarterback from Notre Dame, in that type of position to try to beat you using his arm, he has shown more often than not he's not capable of doing that.
If NIU can do it, why not Indiana?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Why not Indiana? So as the bracket sits right now, who's your favorite?
Georgia. Just easy.
Circumstance?
Easy walk. Easy walk. Whether it's Notre Dame or Indiana, you're safe there. They'll handle business against one of those teams. And then you have the side with SMU and Penn State and Boise State. I don't think any of those teams measure up to Georgia at their peak. The only problem I have with Georgia is they're going to have to win 3 games to go win a national title. And I have not necessarily seen them at their best for 3 straight games. And that's the problem you run into. But I think Georgia has the best walk to the national title game. And for that reason, I'm going to go ahead and pick them as my national title winner.
How much of an impact do you think the Carson Beck injury is going to have on Georgia? Is it going to be positive for them? Is it going to be negative for them?
I think it'll be negative at large. But I also think as long as you don't have some ridiculous a bunch of ridiculous turnover problems. It's Gunnar Stockton. That's his name, correct?
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong. As long as you don't have crazy turnover problems, he did have that nasty pick at the end of the SEC championship game. Like, dude, don't do that. Don't do that again. But I think he brings a different type of offense to that Georgia team. He can use his legs a little bit more, and I think it'll throw teams for a loop. Who are you prepping for? How are you prepping to deal with his legs? He can air it out just enough to go expose you. I thought, when he came in at the start of that second half, he led one of the best touchdown drives of the game in the SEC championship game against Texas. So I'm not saying it's going to be a positive for them, but I think it's a different look that people have not been able to prepare for all year. As long as he keeps the turnovers down, I think that Georgia team can pace their way to a national championship.
What do you think the chances are?
And also, let's not forget they won 2 with Stetson.
Yes, that is
right.
That,
let's not forget that. And Stetson in the first one, the first national championship they won, he wasn't even the starter from the beginning of the year. It was JT Daniels, and he had to earn his way, earn his keep. So they've done this before. There's a little bit of runway to show that maybe the starter that you thought you were going to have is, you know, they can still get over the top because they have so much talent just scattered all over that roster.
So I've been asking that question to pretty much every guest we've had on. Who's your favorite from the college football playoff as the bracket sits right now? And all of us keep landing on Georgia, but I can't help but think to myself that, are we overthinking it when it comes to Oregon? Had they been the best team all season? They've been number one all season. They beat Ohio State. They're going to have, you know, they're going to host the game. They don't have to play three straight to win the national championship. Are we going to look up by the end of this thing and say, oh, they were sitting there
the
whole time?
It's just the road, though.
Yeah.
It's the road. It's Tennessee or Ohio State can really, you know, stifle
you. Beating Ohio State twice is hard.
Give them an issue. And then, like, if Texas makes it through and Oregon wins that second round matchup, that could be really tough. The reason we are all landing on Georgia is because their side of the bracket is simple. The path is laid. The path is there. They just have to not screw up. Don't beat yourself, and you'll be okay. Oregon's going to have to go out of their way to beat an Ohio State, to maybe beat a Tennessee, to beat a Texas. That's why. But I totally get your thought process. Are we overthinking this? This team's undefeated. They're not undefeated by accident. They were able to beat Ohio State. They handled business against Penn State. They've handled business against everybody they played. They beat Boise State, another playoff team. They've
and
beaten
Dylan
three,
Gabriel looks really
they've
good.
They've beaten three playoff teams. Like, I get where you're coming from there, but their path is just so much harder than Georgia's. And, you know, I think there's a distinct possibility they don't even make it to the national championship game. And for that reason, that's why you lean to Georgia, because it feels like you write them into the national championship game at this moment, unless you think that the quarterback situation is going to be, you know, awful. You think Gunnar Stockton's going to be miserable when he gets into that position.
Staying in college football, major, major news happening today. Bill Belichick has been introduced as the new North Carolina head football coach. And for a few days now, and even George and I have done it, and we've talked to David Cobb about it, most of the focus has been, why won't it work? And when we closed the show yesterday, I gave a few reasons as to why I thought it might work. I don't know if this is going to be a disaster. I don't know if it's going to be some grand success. My prediction would be, it's okay. I think they're probably going to win like 7 or 8 games a year, maybe 9, have a couple big seasons with them. What do you think? Bill Belichick, UNC.
He brought a right-hand man with him in Mike Lombardi to be his GM. He knows how to balance rosters. I think that the one thing that – the biggest thing that people are going to latch onto and why it won't work is he's done it at the pros.
Yeah.
And he even rubbed those guys the wrong way. Do you think he's going to be able to get all of these – you know, college players to pull in the right direction in this day and age? He's 72. He's not relatable. That's the biggest thing you look at. But when you look at him in general, one of the best coaches of all time, best NFL coach of all time, I would say. 6 Super Bowls, was able to handle business every chance he got. And, you know, he did a really good job at the pro level of managing rosters and spending money in the right ways. And, you know, the reason it could work is college football is really pro football at this point. It's about using your money wisely, finding a way to put together a competitive roster, and I think in that realm he can be successful. I don't know if it's going to work, but what I do know is North Carolina's been middling for some years. They tried to go back to Mack Brown to find some success. They weren't able to do that. They were 6-6 this past season before they let him go. I think making this type of splash, hiring this guy when he's available, is a fine move for them, giving him a 5-year, $50 million contract. He's a guy who will always be ready to coach. Like, as much as we did kind of enjoy him on the Manning cast and, you know, doing all of his media rounds, he clearly wanted to be a ball coach. And I know he's older, but you know his heart's still in it. You know he's willing to put in the work. So we'll see how it all plays out. I don't necessarily think it's going to work, but it's a splash hire that gets people excited about North Carolina football, and you can definitely see the groundwork being laid for some success at North Carolina under Bill Belichick.
Now, today in his presser, he said the rumor about the 400-page document was not true. He said, you cannot believe everything on the internet. And I'm going to be honest, I'm a little disappointed that that's not true, because I also find it very funny that when all of us found out that Bill Belichick had a 400-page document, we all went, yeah, that tracks. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and also, the reason I'm disappointed about no 400-page document, whenever anybody has a manifesto about how they're going to run a team, usually it's successful.
Right.
Usually it's successful.
Look
so
at Con Stallions. They won a national championship.
Exactly. That's the disappointing part of it. But I bet there was some document about how he was going to run this thing that he ran by North Carolina. It may not have been 400 pages.
It was 415.
Maybe 150 pages, something like that. But I think that this is a guy who still cares about winning at the highest of levels, who can manage a roster. We'll see if he can do that at the college level. He's done it at the pro level. I think he can be successful. But I think more so than anything, it's going to get us talking about North Carolina football. And that's, for North Carolina and their athletic department, that's a good thing. That's an overwhelming good thing.
Yeah, the term sheet is $50 million over 5 years, but years 4 and 5 are not guaranteed, and he has a lot of bonus opportunities within the deal. It's difficult because I understand those who say it could be a disaster, because when you look at college football now and how NIL operates and how the transfer portal operates, it is difficult to see Bill Belichick playing that game. But they have hired a GM, and Michael Lombardi, who is very good at his job. Now, he hasn't had much college experience either, so they're taking a risk there. They're overhauling the athletic department to put more money toward NIL. That was part of the deal.
And they're going to have revenue sharing too, though.
They're going to have revenue sharing. But on the other side, it's Bill Belichick. And you know that defense is going to be elite.
Part of
it's all going to come down to me. Can he get the players?
I don't see why not. He's going to have NFL staffers. He's an NFL lifer. They know that if they go with Bill Belichick, he's going to prep you for the next level. Well, like, that's a big selling point.
So I want you,
and we've seen that at Colorado. What Deion's done, even.
Yes.
And I know people will say that it's completely different. I understand. Like, Deion's more relatable. He's a little younger.
It's somewhat
like,
different.
But like, he littered that staff with a bunch of former players. Damian Lewis at the D line position as the D line coach, and Warren Sapp. And, you know, he had Mike Zimmer for a little bit on the defensive staff. He's got a bunch of guys that have already been in the NFL ranks who know what it takes. So the coaching they're getting, they're going to get at North Carolina under Bill Belichick, is the best coaching you can get. So that's the selling point that you can give to these guys. I can get you to the next level. I know it better than anybody. I won 6 Super Bowls. I'm not that far removed from them either. So that, to me, yes, it's going to be about can he get the players, but that selling point, that sells itself.
Yeah, because I'm not worried about player development by any means with Bill Belichick. That's not what I'm worried about. The things I'm worried about are, to be quite honest, when you're recruiting guys now, at the top of their priority list, is it getting to the NFL? Is that what college players want? Or is it line my pockets? What's that NIL going to look
like? But if you're good enough at the college level, your pockets are going to get lined anyway. Here comes Dr. Pepper selling you something and getting you in a commercial and stuff like that.
I guess because when he went on the Pat McAfee show.
And North Carolina doesn't have small pockets.
I'm not saying that by any means. I'm just saying, if you're being recruited by a school and one of them has Bill Belichick and his pitch to you is, I'm going to get you to the NFL, but you're also being recruited, let's say, by Colorado, and they're saying, we'll get you to the NFL, sure, but even if that doesn't happen, we're going to make sure you're a millionaire by the time you leave college.
Well, Colorado and North Carolina, I think money-wise, probably similar, but it's about the national exposure. And you get national exposure from being good on the field and playing on national television, which you'll be able to do at North Carolina. And my biggest concern is how many white guys that run a 4.8 is he going to get at the wide receiver position? 3-star white guys.
Julian Edelman's running around.
Yeah, he's going to try to get a bunch of Julian Edelmans and Danny Amendolas. And who is the other guy? Chris Hogan's. Yeah, he's going to find guys that play lacrosse. But how many of those guys are going to go
recruit? He's going to raid that UNC soccer and lacrosse team. He's going to raid them.
Doesn't North Carolina have a really good lacrosse team?
Yes.
Yeah. One of the best.
Damn good. So, hey, maybe.
I want a camera in that locker room, though, or in the film session, because we've heard stories of him ripping Tom Brady's head off after, like, Brady had, like, a 4-touchdown, 300-yard performance, and Bill Belichick's like, well, you missed this read on this one play. Like, I definitely want to see his first interaction with an 18-year-old who is just terrified because he's talking to Bill Belichick and see how that goes down. I will say, though, I think that the Manning cast, in this last year of him not coaching and the presser today, he is more personable than I think people give him credit for, and I don't expect him to approach college students the same way he approaches Tom Brady.
He's still a football coach.
He's a football coach, but I feel like he's going to have
Do you get this, too? Like, what you're saying I agree with, because you saw more of his personality because he had to show it, but even then, it's not like he was, as an analyst, Mr. Warmth and personality by any stretch. He just had good stories.
Not unless he was talking about Ed Reed.
Yeah, but like I think that's a little over-exaggerated, saying he showed it. Oh, he's got some good personality traits. Yeah,
well,
I think
if
that's
if a rock started speaking, we would do backflips.
Right.
This is a miracle
for sure. Yeah, for sure.
And that was Bill Belichick. Hey, we know he.
But
can.
He, to your point, he's going to have to find a way to talk to these college players a lot different than he did his NFL guys.
Yeah.
They're on contract. They're pros. It's going to be a little bit of a learning curve, but I think he's a smart enough guy to figure it out.
Do you have concerns about the succession plan?
Steve Belichick?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. We'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. Steve Belichick's been around his dad long enough. He knows how to run a program or a franchise or be a head coach. We'll see. I don't think that's the best thing in the world. That is a ridiculous amount of flexing your muscles as far as like the stature of coach you are, sort of LeBron James, Bronny action going on there. So I don't necessarily love that, but I think Steve Belichick's been around long enough to where he could potentially take over as a head coach. I don't like it though, by any stretch of the imagination.
Do you think?
Because that could be soon. He's 72 years old.
Yeah, very soon. Well, and that's where the criticism comes into is you just got rid of Mac Brown because he's old, and so you hired Bill Belichick, who's a year younger than he is. But it's also Bill Belichick, so I understand it. I do have this question for you. North Carolina is a blue blood of college basketball. Basketball has been their bread and butter for their entire existence. Does it signal to you at all where college athletics is going that one of the college basketball blue bloods is overhauling their athletic department for football?
Yeah, a little bit. It's more pressurized on the football front because that's what's going to help you in realignment. That's going to make you more valuable as an institution, even though North Carolina's fine. I think they're pretty well stationed.
Yeah, I think
they're really good academics.
Guy named Michael Jordan might
help really
out
good
too.
Academics, always really good in basketball, decent on the football front. They have a bunch of money. They have a good campus. Like, they have a bunch of donors, so I think they're safe there. But I think it does show the investment in football just needs to be very apparent in this day and age, because we have so much realignment. You don't want to get left behind. You want to make sure the ACC stays afloat. If it doesn't, you want the SEC or the Big Ten to be able to take you on. And I think this type of investment does show that they're willing to do that.
Staying in college football real quick before we move on to the Grizzlies, Memphis Tigers, Scooter's Coffee Frisco Bowl.
Shout out.
Are you upset about it some Memphis fans?
I don't get why.
Because my argument has been, well, and it's not the Gator Bowl or the Birmingham Bowl.
You're playing a Power 5 opponent or Power 4 opponent. You're going to get a better payout than you normally do from a regular AAC bowl.
You don't have to go to Hawaii.
I think the kids are going to love it. You're going to be in Dallas. Stop saying Frisco's
in
no man's
land. It's Dallas. I've been screaming that.
Which is ridiculous.
Stop saying Frisco's no man's land. It's Dallas.
Yes, they're gonna have plenty of things to do. It'll be fun. And here's the biggest thing that people need to understand. With the bowl season not mattering as much, and I love our good friends over the AutoZone Liberty Bowl, love Harold Grader. I think there's an understanding, though, that there's been a with the playoff, the 4-team playoff, and now the 12-team and the 14 that could come soon, it's just not the same as it once was. What you want to do, you want to play before Christmas so you can go home and enjoy Christmas and Christmas break with your family. They wanted to play on the 17th. I'm not blaming them at all. I'm totally fine with this. You get a Power 4 matchup before Christmas. You get to go home, enjoy yourself during Christmas.
You want a better bowl game, beat UTSA.
Yes, it's really simple.
It's kind of the same thing with Alabama. You want to be in the playoff, beat Vanderbilt.
It's not that complicated.
It's that simple for me. Grizzlies, 9-1 in their last 10.
Shut up.
Beat the Boston Celtics.
That was a statement, wasn't it?
Unbelievable
win.
That
was great.
I was losing my
mind. John Morant said he didn't want to dunk, and then he does a double, whatever you call that.
A Vince Carter,
Dominique
Wilkins.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Jaren's still playing at a very, very high level on the offensive end. Jalen Wells still doing great things. They're getting healthier by the day. G.G. Jackson finally back on the floor and
he's
practicing
walking,
a little
no
bit
boot,
and walking.
Shooting free throws.
I mean, it's hard not to be positive about the Memphis Grizzlies at this moment. This layoff, though, as you open the show, it's kind of ridiculous.
It's been brutal, and I get it. The NBA Cup, I think it's been mostly a success. I do think that they're going to have an issue with the teams that are left in it and trying to get people to Vegas to watch these teams because it's not the Warriors or the Knicks. They got knocked out. So, like, you have a scenario in which it might be the Hawks and the Rockets in the final, which, you know, for basketball fans like myself, great game. It'll be entertaining to watch. But is that the brand that the NBA wants in there? But my question to you is, and yesterday we opened the show talking about it, do you think the Grizzlies are in true contention in the Western Conference? They are the second seed right now.
I don't see why not. You go on the road, beat the Celtics. You handle this stretch of schedule, at least at the start of it.
But it was
well
bad teams,
Gabe.
It was bad teams, though. And, you know, for some reason, good teams beating bad teams is a negative.
I have no reason to believe. And even the loss they took in December against Dallas was not like
26
free
throws.
They just gave obviously a terrible whistle. The whistle's been awful for them lately. But they just sort of let that one slide, even though they had a lead most of the game. They're playing at a high level, and I think they're in contention. We're just going to have to see how healthy they can stay, where you fit in all of these guys when you're fully healthy, and then we'll sort of reevaluate from there. But you're 17-8, you're third in the Western Conference. You feel good about where you're at.
You feel very good about where you're at now. Final question for you before I let you go, because I know you got to get back home to the baby. A lot of conversation this week during the break about roster and crunching and guys that may or may not be available for the Memphis Grizzlies. A few names that we have heard, Cam Johnson. He's at the top of the list. Herb Jones got floated around yesterday, but then the Pelicans came out and said, we're not going to trade Herb Jones.
That would be phenomenal. But
I think that's probably the best decision for them. Also, we might have Herb Jones at home and Vince Williams Jr. Yeah. He's just got to play. As owner of Vince Williams Jr. Island, I'm a little worried about the injuries. He's still my guy, and I'll still go to war for him. Little worried about it. Want to see Vince Williams Jr. actually play basketball games. I want to give a shout-out to Cam Spencer for rocking the undershirt when he doesn't need to in honor of Vince Williams Jr. That was phenomenal watching that in that game against the Washington Wizards. And then he had a career high. You absolutely love to see it. But my question to you is, do you think the Grizzlies need to make a consolidation move, or have you seen through a quarter of the season that their depth is actually one of the main advantages that they have?
I think their depth is a great advantage, but if you need to consolidate and find a bigger and better piece, if you can go get a Cam Johnson, go do it. Obviously, be careful about the price. You don't want to give up three of your rotation players to go get a guy like that and a first-round pick or whatever the hell it would take to salary match. But at the same time, if you can consolidate, let Jake LaRavia be a good piece in one of those trades, get back a good piece that will be in your rotation, I'm all for it. But again, it's about the price, and it's about making the right move at the right time. I don't think you just need to make a move to make a move. What we see in the Grizzlies fan base, and really fan bases around the NBA, is people want to see you. They want new.
Yeah.
They just want to,
they want
Cam
a new Johnson, toy.
Unload the clip. Go get that guy. We want this new toy. And it may not be as good as you think on the other side. So still be smart. Zach Kleiman has done that throughout his tenure. I have a lot of hope that they'll continue to do that. If the right move presents itself, go for it, 100%. But if it doesn't and we get to the trade deadline and there's nothing on the table, going forward with this roster is not the worst thing in the world. I think you'll be okay.
Well, because I think a lot of people are assuming that something like Marcus Smart, Jake LaRavia, and a first, maybe two firsts, would get it done. But we're dealing with the Brooklyn Nets, and we know that they want a lot for their players. And
they want picks. They want picks.
And you know how much I like to go into other teams' message boards, see what the fans are saying. I went to go peruse the Nets and see what their fans want. When it comes to the Grizzlies, there has been a name that has continued to pop up. And it is a name that I do not know if I am willing to part with, and I don't know if Grizzlies fans would be willing to part with. And that name is G.G. Jackson.
Yeah, you got to be careful with that. You transfer him from a two-way. There's so much runway, developmental runway with him.
20 points per game is
so damn good. So, yeah, you got to be careful with that. But if there is the correct move out there, and you can get rid of some picks and Jake LaRavia and Santi for a Cam Johnson.
Hey, bite your tongue, not Santi Aldama. Bite your tongue.
It could potentially be on the table for you. Go make a move.
Bite your tongue.
Yes.
No one touches Santi.
But again, just don't try to force a move because you want new. But that's not what Grizzlies and Zach Kleiman in this front office have ever done.
Gabe, this was great.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Phenomenal. You guys have been rocking it. I know you'll do it in my absence. I'll be back on, January 6th?
January 6th.
Yeah.
Yeah. No other plans on January 6th?
No.
None?
No, I'll be in
None?
Here.
You'll be None. Here?
Yeah, I'll be
Nothing
here.
Nothing to worry about?
I'll be ignoring everything else.
Great.
I'll be in here.
Awesome. Well, that was Gabe Kuhn, host of the Gabe Kuhn Show. When we come back, we got to break down the NBA quarter awards that George and I have picked. Stick around and listen to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. I want to thank Gabe Kuhn for spending 40 minutes with us in that first segment. That was fantastic. We did a Gabe Kuhn retrospective. If you missed it, it'll be up on the podcast here shortly. But y'all know what I love to say about the NBA and basketball and sample sizes. You need a 20-game sample size before you can really take anything away from an NBA season, whether it is a player or a team, trends, 20 games, 15 to 20 games. I like to try to keep it at 20. Well, guess what? We're at about the quarter mark of the NBA season, and it is time for George and I to hand out our quarter season awards for the NBA. These are the awards that we're going to give out today. MVP, Rookie of the Year, Sixth Man of the Year, Coach of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and Most Improved Player. Let's start off with the easiest one. No surprise here. I think the MVP of the NBA season, a quarter way through, has to be Nikola Jokic. Has to be Nikola Jokic. He is having the best PER season we have ever seen in NBA history. He is averaging 30.1, 13 rebounds, 10.4 assists. He is shooting 56% from the field, 52% from three, and 81% from the line. Denver has a plus 11 net rating when he is on the court. And just, George, guess what they have when he's off the court?
I don't want to know.
Minus 15. It's terrible. Woo! It's one of the worst we've ever seen. The plus minus of Nikola Jokic is quite literally, they go from being one of the best offenses we have ever seen in the NBA to one of the worst offenses we've ever seen in the NBA when he's off the court. Nikola Jokic is absolutely the MVP. Honorable mentions, SGA, I think, needs to be in the conversation.
He's been a monster.
If the Nuggets drop too low in the standings, I could see it by default going to SGA this season.
Giannis has been fantastic.
Has been unbelievable for the Bucks. I think that Jason Tatum deserves some consideration, but we got some injury news with Jason Tatum today. He might be out for a little bit. Not good.
Not good.
But I do think Nikola Jokic has to be your MVP. Do you have any pushback?
No. He's also my pick for MVP. I was going to say there's probably maybe one or two other easy ones if we wanted to get to those.
Sure. Let's go ahead and let's get to Rookie of the Year. Because I think Rookie of the Year right now. Listen, Grizzlies fans. I know. Jalen Wells. I know.
He's been great.
He's been fantastic. He is first team all rookie right now if you ended the season today. Zach Edey, I think, was leading Rookie of the Year for a while there because he was just getting the most production. But we haven't seen Zach Edey play in a couple of weeks. Hopefully we'll get to see him play soon. We got a good update yesterday from our good friend DeMichael Cole. He said that Edey is heading in the right direction. But Rookie of the Year, it's clearly Jared McCain. It has to be Jared McCain right now. He's averaging 16.1 awesome. Points per game, 45, 37, 90 splits. He is one of the reasons the 76ers have not dived straight into hell with the season that they are having because, yikes.
Who else is playing over there?
Well, they've got their guys back now. So like Tyrese Maxey's been playing. George, I think, might still be out because of that injury that he suffered.
It was the second
hyperextension. Joel Embiid played against the Bulls and he looked terrible in the first half, and then he looked like Joel Embiid in the second half. How's that going to go? They're in the Eastern Conference. They should probably still sneak into the playoffs because they are in such a dog conference. But Jared McCain's been their most consistent player of the season. He's probably been their best player this season. He has been fantastic for the Sixers. He has really, really been a bright spot in a very dark season for them. I think some honorable mentions. Stephon Castle has been very good.
He was
my dark horse pick for Rookie of the Year heading into the season. And depending on how we see minutes happen with the Sixers with the return of some of these guys and Jared McCain, I wouldn't be shocked if Castle snuck in there. I think Jalen Wells is still in the conversation. Dalton Connect is still probably in the conversation, but he's been struggling ever since Mr. David Cobb yelled at me. And Grizzlies fans about Dalton Connect. You want to go check his stats?
I don't. It's been rough. I really don't.
Hasn't been good.
The Stephon Castle thing to me is probably the most interesting, and it's the same kind of issue, excuse me, with Jared McCain, is that we're going to have to see where the minutes come from for a guy like Castle, especially if the Spurs can start to get a little healthier and push back towards those play-in or playoff spots. But I just think he's been brilliant. But I'm with you with Jared McCain.
It's going to be really interesting, too, to see a team like the Rockets. They have Reed Sheppard, who a lot of people think he is the most talented rookie that isn't getting a ton of playing minutes right now. I think Risha Shea still has an outside shot of making a run at Rookie of the Year because he's been good. He's just not hitting his threes at all. But when it comes to Reed Sheppard, Fred VanVleet's been struggling this year. It's been kind of a secret because the Rockets are right now second in the West. They're second in the West just because the Grizzlies haven't been playing.
Mm-hmm.
But Fred VanVleet hasn't been great for them. At what point does Reed Sheppard get a bit of a run? Interesting. Could he make a run towards Rookie of the Year with improved minutes? Maybe. But right now, I think by far the favorite is Jared McCain and should be Jared McCain. So congrats to him for winning our quarter season, Rookie of the Year. Next up, I think one that's pretty easy is Sixth Man of the Year.
Yeah.
This one's not even close to me. We watched him against the Memphis Grizzlies. Peyton Pritchard is the most dangerous white man in basketball right now. He's insane coming off of the bench. Well, other than Nikola Jokic.
That's European white.
That's different. American white.
We're not talking slobs here.
We're not talking slobs. No, Peyton Pritchard, he is averaging 16.4 points per game off the bench on 48, 43, 87 shooting percentages. He is launching 8.6 threes per game, and he is making four of them for Joe Mazzulla and that offense up there in Boston. That is Boston's offense. When you're watching them, you're like, these guys are firing. And Peyton Pritchard is the perfect guy to have coming off of your bench. He's been phenomenal for them this season. I don't know if you've seen the clips of them talking about what they run in practice to help their defense.
I haven't.
They have a drill that is called Stop Peyton. It is just the defense. Their job is to try to not allow Peyton Pritchard to score. The Boston Celtics have said many a time, if he wasn't on the Celtics, he'd be starting most places in the NBA. He's a dangerous man. Hmm. Dangerous man that can fill up the stat sheet. He is what the Sixth Man of the Year award, the definition of it should just be a picture of Peyton Pritchard this season.
Yeah.
And, you know, Malik Monk, I think the last few years was fantastic at it, but he's now starting for the Kings. Kevin Herter's coming off the bench for them, mostly because of injury that they've been dealing with.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked if we saw Malik Monk flip back to that six-man role for the Kings, but I think Peyton Pritchard is absolutely running away with it right now. I think Amen Thompson has a shot at it. Ty Jerome. DeAndre Hunter's
been very good.
Really good for them.
Very good.
The Memphis Grizzlies got a couple of guys that if they keep this play up, they'll be honorable mentions. They're not going to win it by any means, but they'll be honorable mentions. Marcus Smart looking okay as a sixth man. Santi Aldama.
I was going to say, the one that Gabe wants to ship out of here.
Yeah, how dare he come? How dare he come on his own show and give a take like that? How dare he? Never again.
Trying to get rid of one of the most consistent
never
bench
again.
Players.
He's a restricted free agent. They're not letting him go.
Oh, yeah.
Hang on to him.
There's no point in doing that.
Next up, let's do most improved. Let's do most improved player. Before we get into the ones that deserve a little bit more conversation. So most improved, I kind of hate this award.
Yeah.
Because we've lost the plot. We've lost the definition of it. To be quite honest, if this award goes to people it is technically built for, I do think that Santi Aldama would be in the conversation. I think that Jalen Johnson would be in the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Franz Wagner would have won it before he got hurt his oblique. But the runaway favorite now is Jalen Williams and should be Jalen Williams. As their award is presented to people now, Jalen Williams is going to win this thing, whether you agree with it or not. He was already a great player. He had already arrived. We already knew he was part of the core of the Thunder. A lot of people think he's actually their second best player, not Chet, which I can't necessarily disagree with you. That guy, most improved player? Sure, whatever. Their award's kind of stupid at this point anyway. But if it's built to go to players like Santi. It's built to go to players like Jalen Johnson. It is not built to go to players like Jalen Williams who've been established. But that's a gripe that I'll just always have in the NBA. The only awards we got left, Coach of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. Which one do you want to go first?
Let's go with Coach. And real quick, my quick shout-out for most improved player is going to be RJ Barrett with the Raptors.
Good call. Lottery pick, though. Disqualified.
Well, you didn't say that before now.
But he should be.
He should.
I know Ja wanted to. That's what I mean. If you're a lottery pick, you shouldn't be in the running for most improved player.
Completely agree. I agree 100%. But we're talking about a guy who just from getting a few more minutes a game is going from 20-ish points a game to like 26 this year. I mean, Barrett's been phenomenal. But let's go to Coach of the Year because I know, again, I think this is another one where we both agree in principle but also disagree just on who it can and should
be. I've got Ime Udoka. He has the Rockets second in the West right now. He's got this young team committed to defense. They don't have a quote-unquote superstar player, but they got a lot of really good players that he has bought into the system. I think he has helped create a culture there. I do think that a guy like Dylan Brooks has been big time for him. And to be honest, you should probably give him the award just for being able to corral Dylan Brooks. He's not taking as many shots per game as he did in the past. He's been an effective player for them. He's had a couple Dylan moments, sure. But overall, I think that Ime has done phenomenal work with the Houston Rockets, and he has completely turned around that franchise, and he has gotten these young players to buy in and to buy into their roles, which I think are very important. So that's why Ime would be my choice. But I know the guy you're going to go with. Mm-hmm. I can't necessarily argue against it, even though Ime is my choice.
It's the same thing for me with Ime. I mean, he's done a phenomenal job with these young Rockets. I have Kenny Atkinson over there in Cleveland. I mean, this is a team where a lot of people had questions because they're running out essentially the same core that hasn't been able to get it done for the past pretty big handful of years now. They're 21-4 in leading the Eastern Conference. I understand it's the Eastern Conference, but you don't go 21-4 to start your season without having some juice. I mean, they've got a 10-point differential, you know, across the season so far. They're going through a little bit of a slump right now, but I think that's a lot of some injuries coming in for Evan Mobley. Darius Garland is probably missed a little bit of time. So I've got Kenny Atkinson for getting this team closer to over that hump where a lot of people, myself included, had questions for that team going into the season.
I have no problem with it whatsoever if Kenny Atkinson wins it. No problem whatsoever. What they're doing up in Cleveland is remarkable. A lot of people had doubts about that team. I was one of them. I thought they needed to break it up. They have proved most of us wrong. We'll see what happens in the playoffs, though. You're going to get Max Strus back?